This is the Pet Podcast on Pets.ca, episode number 41, The Heat and Our Pets, for July 17, 2008. Hey there, pet lovers. How's it going? And welcome to the 41st Pet Podcast on Pets.ca. My name is Marco, and as always, we're coming to you from Montreal, Quebec, Canada. And today is July 17, 2008. Well, I'm recording on location, or at least I was trying to, and it started raining. So now I've gone from out of a tree, and now I'm recording this in my car. So if you hear the pitter-patter of raindrops on the roof, you'll know why. For today's show, we have another interview with Dr. Lee. This time we're going to talk about the heat and our pets, sunburn in our pets, the heat in cats and dogs. But rather than discuss it, let's just get right into the interview now. I'd like to welcome back Dr. Lee to our podcast. It's been a few weeks, but to this week, we're going to talk about, you know, the heat and the summer and our pets. And before we get into it, welcome back, Dr. Lee.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's always great to be here.
And it's always great to chat with you. Let's talk about it now. We're in the middle of our hot summers. You're in Arizona, so it's really, really hot. So I know heat issues with our pets are issues that come up. And very often, we're thinking about our dogs in particular, but I actually wanted to start off talking about cats. How does the heat affect our cats relative to how dogs are affected by the heat?
Typically, cats are better at dealing with heat than dogs. Heat stroke is much more rare in cats than it is our dog pets.
Is there some anatomical reason, or is there some reason that's just off the top of your head, why they tolerate the heat better?
Probably a few things. One, just their their agileness and their ability to get out of situations that are too hot. I think that helps out. They have the ability to go find some place that's cooler for them. That probably is one of the main reasons.
Okay, excellent. And, in terms of, when cats do they overheat in similar ways to dogs?
They do. Pretty much all mammals will go through, it's a very clear sequence of events that occurs, that if it's not stopped, it will lead, very much to the same conclusion of death. So it is a very big deal. But pretty much if you're a mammal, we know exactly what's going to happen to you when you get into heat stroke. And heat stroke, we define it as a state of extreme hyperthermia, or core body temperature being much too high, and in Fahrenheit that's usually between 106 and 109, and if you are in that range for an extended period of time, you will have thermal damage to the tissues, and that will slowly or rapidly progress to death, depending on whether you've gotten out of that temperature or not. Core temperatures as high as 110, you can actually be dead within just a few minutes.
Wow. And we'll talk about one of the common sources of this as we progress in the podcast. But let's get into dogs for a second as well. At what temperature is there a temperature outside where it's just not advisable? Let's say it's a sunny day and it's really hot. Is there a temperature that you would advise your clients keep your dogs inside?
The way that I go with this, and it's the same thing, we have a lot of questions on, what temperature am I allowed to keep my dog in the car? Is that ever an okay thing? Is it okay to take them for walks? What temperature is it okay to be outside? And a lot of times there's not an exact answer, especially too when you're outside. Is it a dry heat? Is it a wet heat? Is there wind? Is there shade? I mean, there's a lot of factors that come in, so it's very difficult to say, pinpoint it down to an exact temperature. The way that I see it is, for a normal average dog, would I want to be out there? If I would not want to be outside and I would be unhappy, that's probably not so great for the dog either. When we start to look at where we need to change that a little bit is when we take a look at dogs that are at a higher risk for heat stroke, those that are obese, overweight, or they have any type of upper airway issues, which would include a lot of the breeds, like the brachycephalic breeds, the dogs with little smush noses, like pugs, Bostons, bulldogs. Those are going to be at higher risk, or are geriatric. Anyone in those, again, then I think we need to put it out as, okay, would it be okay to have our two-year-old outside at this temperature? Would we want our grandmother out at this temperature? These are not, this is not going to be okay for them. It's probably not going to be okay for these higher risk pets either.
Okay, and that's, you know, it's just common sense, but often we don't think about it. We think, you know, some pet owners just don't realize it. They think that, you know, their animal can tolerate the heat just because they are tolerating the heat. Actually, you know, I know some people that actually love the heat and they love to sweat, and they can even go out in 105, 110 degree weather for a short period of time and they're not bothered by the heat. Maybe if they themselves are sweating profusely, you know, even though they're tolerating it, maybe if they're sweating like crazy, then that's a good sign that their dogs are uncomfortable as well.
Right. I would agree. There's also, you know, a lot of times in those situations, some of those people, they don't realize that while they're enjoying the heat, they've also done quite a number of things to change for them to be happy outside. They've made sure that, you know, they're wearing sunblock, big hats and glasses. They've changed, you know, what they're wearing. And there are people that really do like the excess heat. You know, that's, you know, in our dogs, they can't take off their fur coat.
Right.
Quite as easily. So that does become a, you know, you're right, that is an issue. There are some people that it may be comfortable for them and not so for the dogs. For those people, I would say, when your friends that don't like the heat so much, I would judge it a little bit more by them.
Right, right. So we're talking about the average person. So
the average person. And then when we're dealing again with our higher risk people, we're thinking of the average, you know, elderly person, average kid, you know, is it okay for them? Also, you're right, there's this misconception that, like, we think of dogs as, oh, you know, they're more, I don't know, natural, or they're used to being out in the wild. Well, yes and no, they're not used to being out in suburbia on concrete where everything is baking a little bit more. Yes, they may be used to being out in the wilderness where there's trees and shades and places to go. It's a very different situation when we're dealing with our backyard, living inside of a human environment.
Right. And I guess, like, another point that might be valid as well, you can tell me, is that, you know, yes, they're dogs, but they're domesticated dogs. And might it be accurate to say that they've lost a little bit of their edge over the few thousand years we've been breeding them because now they've been domesticated, that somehow they're different and therefore may act somewhat different based on their domestication? Does that have any validity, that train of thought?
Absolutely, especially when we take a look at some of the specific breeds, again, like we talked about, the brachycephalic breeds, those dogs with, you know, the little smush noses. Those are not dogs that are used to being out in the wilderness. We don't have the wild Boston Terrier packs
right.
out there.
Right, exactly right. So these are, you know, these are new breeds, and we've taken them under our care. So their survival instincts, they're not as sharp as they would be if they would just be living in the wild.
Absolutely.
Okay, cool. So, you know what? I was going to talk about this later, but let's get into it now, just in case, you know, there are these people that are comfortable with the heat that don't see the signs in themselves. Why don't we just mention a few of the signs of heat stroke? So, you know, you're walking your dog, it's a really hot day, and your dog is feeling uncomfortable and he's at risk for heat stroke. What are some of the symptoms that that dog is going to be presenting so that, you know, dog owner can, you know, be aware of what the symptoms of heat stroke are?
They're going to be, the early signs that we see are going to start off with increased heart rate, increased respiratory rate. Those can be a little bit difficult to interpret because, again, panting is a pretty normal thing that we see in our pets.
Right.
When we see it being excessive and when we stop, and we're not exercising and that panting seems to be severe and not going away, that can be a very early sign of some heat stroke. They'll typically have bounding pulses. Their pulses will just be a little bit more prominent than normal. Vomiting and diarrhea, if you're taking your dog out and it seems a little hot and they throw up. Yes, dogs can be a little bit more predisposed to throwing up here or there, but when we see it on a hot day when we're walking, that can be, again, an early sign of heat stroke. And, again, depression. If they start to feel, not have that bright, alert, happy look, that can be an early sign. So the signs can be a little bit vague, but they need to be, you know, watched out for. So if you see this panting dog seems a little bit down, maybe throws up, that could be a really early sign.
I'm sorry, is drooling ever a sign?
It sure can be. I mean, it's one of those, again, that's one of the ways that they're going to try to reduce some of their heat out of their body is just excess panting. And that will usually lead to some drooling.
Okay. And, you know, if we are attentive, and I hope we are, and maybe people that are listening that, you know, didn't know might learn something, if we do see these signs, I mean, it seems obvious to get them out of the sun. Should we get them from the sun into an air-conditioned car, into an air-conditioned house? Or is it better to get them just outside of the direct sun and have their bodies cool more slowly as opposed to more rapidly?
Right. I think taking them into an air-conditioned house is fine. You're right. If we take a dog that's in heat stroke, like when they come in on emergency at the hospital, the last thing that we want to do is cool them too rapidly. That increases their risk of death by quite a bit. So what I don't recommend is that dog that you think is having heat stroke, pouring ice water all over it, throwing it in the pool. That's a very high-risk activity for your pet. Again, with people, if you're getting really hot, you know, it's very comfortable to be in a nice air-conditioned house. It's a little bit different. Again, if you're super hot and someone throws a bunch of water on you, your sympathetic nervous system is just going to be freaking out with that type of stimulus. So again, a steady reduction of that temperature is the best, and taking them, you know, out of the heat, into the shade, and if possible, air-conditioned environment is a good idea.
Okay, very good to know. And let's talk a little bit about walking now. And I know there's obviously going to be some discrepancies based on breed and sensitivity to sun and whether they're brachiocephalic, as we mentioned. Should we walk our dogs for a shorter period of time in these higher heat days?
I think that's a good idea. I also think that getting them out in the early morning, late evening is going to be, you know, a lot better. Again, just when it's comfortable for us, it's going to be probably more comfortable for them. And let the dog kind of determine, you know, that length of time. That dog's no longer pulling. There's some slack in that leash. That may be time to turn around.
Right. And I guess before we move on to the next topic, you know, I might just suggest that, you know, some people tend to leave their dogs outside very often, which in my opinion is not always a great idea. Dogs are social animals. They love to be with us. If you're leaving your dog outside for hours at a time, probably not the best idea. But certainly if your dog is outside for any length of time and it's hot, the dog needs some shade. The dog needs a tree. The dog needs a doghouse, a balcony to lie under. Obviously, you know, having no shade for your dog and it being outside, you're just really increasing its risk of heat stroke really quickly.
Correct. And, you know, there does, like you said, there needs to be shade, there needs to be water. Also, there needs to be some, you know, good airflow. That's one of the things that we see, and it's something that we deal with, like with animal control when there's neglect issues. There'll be these people that there's a small backyard and it's walled on all sides, and there's this tiny little bit of shade or a doghouse, and the people don't understand that this is not adequate. It's not sufficient, you know, for them. So there needs to be a decent thing of shade. Again, it comes back to, is this going to be comfortable for people? You know, a porch that has an overhang, that has a breeze going through, is a lot better than a doghouse. You know, a doghouse can act more like an oven than anything else. And again, I've heard it too many times of people saying, well, the dog has shade. That's why we have that small enclosed doghouse out in the middle of the backyard.
Right. And I, so I guess, again, it just, it comes down to a lot of common sense and a lot of logic. You know, even though we don't want to go in that doghouse, it makes sense to like stick our hand in there, stick our head in there. If it's 120 degrees, it ain't good.
Right. And that metal tool shed out in the back, that's not going to work either.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Right. So just because we think it's an enclosure and it's providing shade, if it's still, you know, really, really hot in there, it's obviously the wrong place for your dog. So the last topic I guess I just wanted to talk about is actually sunburn in dogs and perhaps cats too. We hear about this more and more, but cats and dogs can indeed get sunburn. Is this correct?
Yes, and that's one thing over here in Arizona I do see a lot. People get their dog shaved for the summertime, get a very close cut. That skin is actually more sensitive to sunburn than our skin because, again, it's normally covered by 2-3 inches of sometimes in hair. And when we take that off, that skin may or may not have ever seen the sun before. They can be at higher risk, especially when we do something like shave them down.
So what do we do in those cases? Do we have animal sunscreens? Do we have animal t-shirts to protect their skin from the sun? How are people dealing with this?
Yeah, those are all great ideas. Again, I think a lot of times doing early morning, late evening walks, that helps out, decreases that exposure. They do make, dog t-shirts do help out, and they do make sunscreen for dogs. And typically, a lot of the sunscreen products that are safe for babies are also going to be safe for dogs as well. And not only are we looking at the risk of the sunburning, but especially in our very white dogs, pink skin, they're at higher risk for skin cancer as well. And that can be secondary to excess UV light exposure. So that sunscreen can not only help protect them from getting sunburned, but can protect those dogs from getting things like skin cancer.
Because there are so many products out there, I just like to put a caveat out there, even though some products, sun protection products might be good for babies, and that same product might also be good with dogs, I would suggest people ask their vets. Even though it may be true, because there's so many new products coming out, it would probably be a smart idea to ask your vet first if your baby product that protects your baby from the sun is also good for your dog, or you could just go to a pet store and buy something that was specifically developed for dogs. Just wanted to add that in there.
No, I think that's a good idea. I mean, again, there are so many products out there, so that does, some of them can have some unusual ingredients. Definitely a good idea, and the ones getting them specifically for dogs is always probably the best.
So I guess my final thing I wanted to add is, I mean, even though dogs have fur that cover their skin, and sometimes the sun will not penetrate the fur enough to give sunburn, there are parts on a dog's body, specifically the nose, that often get sunburned or, have an easy ability to get sunburned. Is the nose a really common place for most breeds or many breeds to get sunburn? And part two of that question is, what about cats? Some people let their cats roam outside all day, and even though they may be better at protecting themselves from the sun, can cats get sunburn on their skin and noses too? And might it be a good idea to use some type of sunscreen there as well?
They can. To answer the first part, the nose on the dog probably, and that bridge of the nose especially, is probably the most common site of problems, just because it's always exposed and it has very, low amount of fur protecting. There's some dogs that do roll on their back, and I've seen sunburns on their tummy, but that's certainly not as common. With cats, yes, we do see it typically right on the nose, and that makes it a little bit harder to protect because sunscreen, whether it's labeled for cats or not, in that area typically will get licked off.
Right, that's true. That's an important point. And again, maybe it comes down to common sense, where if it's super hot outside and your cat's gone all day long, maybe on certain of the hottest days of the year when everyone's at risk, maybe keep your cat indoors, or at least if you let your cat out on a leash under your supervision for a shorter amount of time, and then bring your cat in, when it's cooler.
I think that's a good idea.
Good. Good. Thanks. So I think those are my major points. Is there anything else that you wanted to add about this topic, Dr. Lee?
Just one thing. We had talked a couple times about, mentioned about the shaving of dogs. That is a very individual a choice, but there are some breeds that it is better for and some lifestyles that it's better for. I think that's also one of those topics that you should ask your vet about that first. There are some breeds that really should not be shaved, and there are some breeds that can actually benefit from that as well. So that would be, if you're thinking about shaving your dog or wondering if that's good for your pet, ask your vet first.
Can you just give us a couple of examples, in your opinion, of dogs that benefit from shaving and dogs where it's a detriment to have them shaved?
With the detriment to have them shaved, there are some dogs that have very specific type hair, fur coats, like, for example, the Great Pyrenees. They have a very specific undercoat, and a lot of times if you shave that down, that hair coat may not grow back the way that it initially did. With that said, I've certainly seen a lot of dogs that are very, very happy with the shave, and their owners say that their dogs do great with it.
So those are some really good tips, Dr. Lee. Thanks so much, as always, for your time. We know some people are going to benefit from these tips as well. And, we know that some pet owners are always under some misconceptions. So thanks so much for helping to clear some of this up, Dr. Lee.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Hope it helps.
So thanks again, Dr. Lee, and we'll speak to you in a little while.
Looking forward to it.
Have a good day.
So I'd like to thank Dr. Lee again, as always, for all the great input that he shares with us so freely. Dr. Lee, as I've mentioned many times before, but in case you're a first-time listener, practices in Mesa, Arizona and Phoenix, Arizona. So if you're looking for a primary vet or a secondary opinion, we highly recommend Dr. Lee. He's so compassionate, so knowledgeable. He's totally worth a first look and a second look if you need a vet. As always, you can post comments, criticisms, and suggestions in the forum. Just make your way to the forums on pets.ca. You can respond to this directly onto the blog at pets.ca/blog. And of course, you can send any emails our way at pets.ca@gmail.com. You can subscribe really easily in iTunes. Just click the iTunes icon on the front page of the blog, and you're all set up if you have iTunes. If you like to use Google Reader, I use that too, and it's a great reader. And you can listen to the blog posts directly and listen to the podcasts directly, straight from Google Reader as well. Just go to reader.google.com, download it, and you're set to go once you put in our address, which is pets.ca/blog. And then Google Reader does the rest. Thanks so much for listening, as everyone. As always, hug your pets, give them massages, give them tickles, give them rubs, and as always, give him one extra scratchy under the chin from Marco. Bye for now. Oh,